Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, it is a busy, busy week here in Film Sociology land. We are going to have part two of a roundtable discussion of the shows from Indie Bard Fest 2023. Full disclosure, I'm playing Corin in Indie Bard Fest's production of As You Like It, which opens Friday at Mud Creek Players. You can go to IndieBardFest.com. for all the show information, all the shows, and all the information, all the tickets there. And so anyway, we'll have a forum in a little bit. And of course, also starting this weekend is the Heartland International Film Festival, which is running through the 15th. You can go to heartlandfilm.org for all the schedules and tickets and all that. The only thing I was able to see from that is a short film called All Inclusive, set in a resort hotel where you have a father, his girlfriend, and his son staying at the presidential suite at a very swanky resort hotel. We're not sure exactly how shady dad's business is, and will things get better? Things start to unravel early when they arrive in this beautiful hotel paradise, when the adults start to argue, and this looks like something that could be a full-length film, especially from the kids' point of view. But it's an interesting look at how there's that mixture of business and pleasure, and what happens when the pleasure starts to unravel. So that's the one film I was able to check out that is a part of the Heartland International Film Festival. It's called All Inclusive, so go check that out. The other thing I got to watch this week, that's not with the festival, but that's okay, and I can't believe I hadn't gotten around to these, but it is the new horror compilation called VHS 85. Now, I believe this is the fifth or sixth one in the series, where it is a series of short horror films shot in a particular style based on the era in which it is being done. In this case, it's 1985, and everything looks like they're shot with handheld, well, those giant handheld VHS cord cameras. So when you have a collection like these, it's going to be a mixed bag. The first three films in this collection are already too long. We have one, the first, it begins with a bunch of 80s young people, early 20s, straight out of the horror film trope of going out to the woods and going out for when you go out on the boats and you jet ski and water skiing. My God, reading's a skill, friends. And it takes a while before it gets into the action that we are kind of looking for or expect with a horror film that's supposed to be set in the 80s. And I know there's two particular characters that they're trying to get us to care more about. It just didn't quite work for me. There's another one about a Mexican newscast in which an earthquake happens, a building collapses, and then what happens when they discover what's going on in the rubble. And that's another one that could have been a little tighter. But the biggest response for me had nothing to do with the film. It was not the film's fault, I should say. I got a screener of this, and I'm watching it on my laptop here at work because it's work-related. And during the collapsing building, the Mexican news building portion of the film, my screener paused, and it startled me. And the fact that it startled me made me laugh, which is why we laugh at horror films. That got the biggest laugh. So it wasn't intentional, but it helps. So there's a couple other shorts, including a theater performance of a one-woman show that deals with virtual reality, because it's the 80s. That's another one that could have been tighter. The best of the lot is a family reunion. It looks like just another white suburban family gathering, holiday gathering, that takes a very dark turn and is connected to another film in this series. I don't want to give it away, but it's really well done. Then there's another one of videos that are being sent out of crimes before they happen. So not quite a Minority Report, but in that same vein. There's also a recurring theme throughout of a science experiment that, of course, we all know is going to go horribly, horribly wrong. And the film ends on a punchline that doesn't quite land for me. I know why they did it. If you remember going through videotapes, the transitions from one recording to another aren't always the smoothest, and you get those clips of commercials. And there's one involving an aerobics program that I'm sure would get a bigger pop if it was a theater full of excited folks. It just didn't quite do it for me. So a mixed bag from VHS 85. And again, there's five or six of these, and I'm just getting around to it. So better late than never. But that is opening this week. All right, friends, as I mentioned, this is another time where film sociology turns into stage sociology. We have another group of artists here to do a roundtable discussion of the shows involving Indie Bard Fest, which is up and running. So you can go to IndieBardFest.com for all the information on all the shows. I'm playing Corin in As You Like It, and hope to see you out in the forest. Anyway, here's my roundtable discussion, part two, here for Indie Bard Fest. Enjoy. This is part two of what we call stage sociology here at Film Sociology. Not the first time I bring up plays on this show, won't be the last. Full disclosure, I'm involved with one of them. Won't be the first time, won't be the last. So we have a roundtable discussion. Vanity Fair's doesn't have squat on us. And I'm going to go around verbally, and the guests are going to verbally introduce themselves and their job with their production, and we're just going to fly.
Totally. Hey, y'all. I am Max McCreary, he, him, his. I am the director of Hannah Cowley's A Bold Stroke for a Husband, and I'm also here representing Natalie Fisher and her production of Medea.
Yes, and you also have a title.
That is true. I am also the current artistic director of Indie Bard Fest.
There you go.
And I'm Kevin Carraher, and I'm playing the characters of Duke Frederick and Duke Senior in As You Like It at Bard Fest at Mud Creek.
That's right.
Hi, I'm Chris Saunders, and I am directing Hedda Gabler, which is happening at Arts for Lawrence.
And I'm Dan Flahive. I'm playing Titus in Titus Andronicus.
And I'm Matthew Sosi. All this and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes. That's what it sounds like. All right, so last week's show, we did talk about Troilus and Cressida, as well as You Like It. Here's the fun portion of the festival. So we have Husbands and Hedda and Medea and Titus. So shows for the whole family. Come empty. come with an empty stomach. You're going to enjoy yourself. So, yeah. Max, I want to start with how did you come about with the production that you're involved with?
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel very privileged to be tackling Hannah Cowley's A Bold Stroke for a Husband,
also known as the original show in the canon here this year.
Right. Yeah. So it's steamy. It's funny. Right. It is. It's a restoration comedy, and so it really leans into, like, what is appropriate versus what is inappropriate in interpersonal connection, and really like camping that up on stage. So I discovered the play as a whole thanks to Hedgepig Theater Ensemble and a project that they do called the Expand the Canon Project. And it's dedicated to exposing communities to work from classical playwrights who are women, who are writers of color, who are not Shakespeare very explicitly, and saying this work is in conversation with the bard and is equally as compelling.
And so costumes galore, I'm guessing?
Absolutely, 100%. Mm-hmm. Bustles, huge underskirts, the whole shebang.
Nice. And for some of the listeners, can you give them a little brief intake on the restoration period?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Restoration Comedy was, like, post-Elizabethan, and this show really is, like, late Restoration. And, oh, gosh, everything has just flown out of my brain here. All of my historical knowledge has disappeared.
It'll come back.
It will. It will come back. The train likes to leave the station every now and then. But the Restoration Comedy in general was built as a response to the cultural, like, dampening down of propriety, right? Making sure that everything was really tight and restricted. And so Restoration Comedy was our theatrical response to that and saying, actually, let's really lean into everything that is big and embellished and overdrawn, melodramatic, and hilarious, right? The stakes are incredibly high in Restoration Comedy over things that feel like they should be very simple solutions.
And isn't the tone is slightly heightened based on the societal norms of the period of that time?
Right, 100%. You know, the one of the primary conceits of the plot of A Bold Stroke for a Husband, a woman who is courting her husband's lover.
As one would do.
As one would do, pretending to be a man.
We've all been there, guys.
Right, in order to win him back. And earn the estate that her husband has given his mistress, right? She tells us, I could not visit her as a woman, which was kind of true, right? Both interpersonally, like as a human being, I can't look you in the face and get this thing that I want from you. I don't have the strength for it. And also, it would not have been appropriate for this character, Victoria, to visit Laura in this time period, just like as a pal. That's not something that goes on.
So it's behavior. I mean, it's a restoration piece, but it's behavior in situations that we can that can be somewhat it could be relatable in some cases today. You can pick your favorite suburb snark comment with that.
Totally, yeah. So I like to think of this play as kind of the Bridgerton of our season.
There, see, it's all the right. Marketing and comparisons. There we go.
That
there
is the cultural touchstone. And there are so many moments that feel really, like, culturally tied to sitcoms from, like, the 90s and early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is a part of the world that we're experiencing in the play. It's definitely a contemporary mindset.
All right, very good. Now, Kevin, I know Kevin and I are in As You Like It, and he's the Bobby Mercer of the group because he's a Yankees fan, so I will not hold that against you. So what is your history with this play? From is this your first time doing As You Like It?
Oh, no, not at all. I told Ryan Shelton, our artistic director coming in, that this piece has kind of a special place in my heart because it was the first Shakespeare I ever did at Marion. It was then called Marion College. It's Marion University now, so that kind of dates me. But, yeah, but it was my first Shakespeare ever, and I actually played Orlando in that production. A little too old to play Orlando now, so that's why
it depends. If there's a nursing home doing it, not so much. So
probably so, yeah. So I thought, you know, I'll try for another role like Duke Frederick or Dulcinea, and Ryan went ahead and cast me in both roles. So it's a bit of a challenge to do both of them because I basically have like one page to go from Duke Frederick to Dulcinea. So a little bit of a challenge.
I do remember going from King Edward to Lord Mayor, same way. Very fast. We have a fast crew backstage helping us out.
Yeah.
So, so going from experiencing it in college, and the beauty of theater, gang, is you know, you can play it in school, and then you get another shot at it when you're an adult in the real world when they cast you for your age.
Yeah.
Actually, here's a question for you all of you. We'll go around Homer. The first time you actually played your age. I was 29 before I actually played my age because in high school, college, a lot of silver spray, a lot of old men, sidekicks, and freaks. So anyway, think about that. But also the fact that you get your relationship with the play changes over time, I guess, and life has a way of doing that. Mm-hmm. How has your point of view of As You Like It changed from the first time you did it to now?
Hmm. That's a good question.
That's why I asked.
I have greater appreciation for it, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the theme still stays the same, mm-hmm. love. So, you know, we can all relate to love on many levels. But, it's a good question. I think I wanted to do this play because I kind of see it as probably the last time I'll ever do As You Like It. So I kind of saw it as bookends for me, you know, both ends of the spectrum there. Unless I do Adam, which is...
You can do my role. I'm playing Corn, but not Corn, this production. I'll have Cold Dead Hands. You know, and this will be the second production in 2 weeks. There was another production, and the other fun thing is these shows kind of come in spurts. And I mentioned on last week's show, a few years ago, I got to see three productions of As You Like It in 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Because Richmond did it. I think it was Richmond. Then Bloomington, and then Evansville. And what's fun with that is you could see they were three completely different approaches to the same story, which is the other reason why we enjoy doing what we do here at Bardfest.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to move on, but have you thought of the age you were where you got to play your own age finally?
Oh, jeez.
Well, for me, it came pretty early, and ironically, it was in As You Like It. I was playing Rosalind as an 18-year-old.
Get out.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I did Rosalind in an all-male-presenting cast and then an all-women-presenting cast in rotating rep in undergrad. So
where was this?
At my university, at Emory University in Atlanta, part of the Theater Emory program. It was an awesome project, and As You Like It is very near and dear to my heart. Rosalind is one of my favorites, and she always will be.
Very good. Mm. Very good. Kev, do you think?
I can't really recall. You know, normally I get cast as like the priest or the guy next door. I'm always getting cast in those roles. So whenever there's a role for a priest or the guy next door, that's me. But so that's why it's a challenge for me to play, I think, Duke Redrick, because it's outside my comfort zone. And I told Glenn last week before in rehearsal that for me to play Duke Frederick, I kind of have to channel my inner Alan Rickman is what I'm going for. You know, I'm backstage thinking Alan Rickman. How would Alan Rickman do this, you know? And so it's a challenge for me, but it's been a lot of fun, yeah.
Okay.
And so Duke Senior comes a lot easier to me. So I'm kind of challenging, channeling David Niven with that instead. Yeah,
okay,
I'm going for David Niven.
Wow.
With a little bit of...
And if you know your Oscar history, please let there not be a streaker during the production of As You Like
okay.
It. So
might make it interesting.
It'll show off his shortcomings. Thank you. That's for all you movie nerds out there.
So those have been my inspirations in those roles. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? When I was in middle school and high school, I was a fat kid, so I always played the dads because that's what you do. That's how casting roles in high school.
Yeah.
So I think it wasn't until like post college when I finally played Robert Todd Lincoln. Actually, when I was roughly the same age.
Oh, that's pretty good. Hey, Ben.
I've always basically played my age or older.
Must be nice.
Yeah. I think it's just because I have a more mature person. So I played my age a lot.
Okay. All right. See, all the different answers. I was 29 when I played somebody in his late 20s. Ironically enough, it was Over the River and Through the Woods, done at Mud Creek Players, which is where we are doing As You Like It. So IndieBardFest.com to go check those out. All right. Medea, Mother's Day.
Hedda Gabler.
Or Hedda Gabler. Hedda Gabler. Now, by the way, Gabler or Gobbler?
So we had to make a decision because you see both.
Right.
But I just didn't want people thinking about turkeys because it's happening in November. So we just
Gabler. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, you're
that's true.
So right.
So what brought you to do Hedda?
Well, I have actually really loved Ibsen for a long time. And to your point earlier, much before I was really good for any role. like
if I can't be in it, I'm going to direct it.
I mean, in college, it's not much. I mean, of course you do anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the thing with Hedda is that especially fascinates me is you see a lot of stories about usually women, like Miss sort of going against societal norm or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little more by the book, I suppose. Even in A Doll's House, which is, you know, the other really big Ibsen play that's still done, it's sort of like, you know, she's repressed by her husband, and so she leaves him. And that's kind of what you see with, you know, Hester Prynne or Madame Bovary, like all of these other people. But with Hedda, and probably the other example of, you know, this sort of time period would be Miss Julie. But with Hedda, it's this incredibly complicated person who, over the centuries at this point that it's been done, has, you know, evoked a lot of just emotion and perspective from the gamut. And that has really appealed to me for a long time.
Nice. And and what's the setting?
So we are loosely setting it when it was set.
Okay.
But it's intentionally being produced with kind of a sexy contemporary look that also echoes back to Victorian. So kind of everywhere.
No, that's fine. That's cool. I only ask because I know, I think we recently, National Theater Live did one where it was kind of sparse and it was still modern dress and there were moments of it, but you didn't have to design an entire, you know, period piece set, you know, a chamber on a stage.
There's, yes. And so the short answer is it'll be sort of similar to that vibe
okay.
that Hove did. But it's not exactly, I mean, I'm not going to try to do, I mean, I'm doing my own thing and obviously,
sure.
But there's some stuff like, you know, she does have to burn the letters and some other things that sort of require something on stage. And then you can't get away from the convention. You can't totally divorce from the convention, right? I mean, obviously people, our whole through line here is people who have no agency, how do they behave, is sort of where I'm starting from with this. And so we definitely see that nowadays, but maybe not exactly in the same way as presented in the script.
Mm-hmm. And how's it been going?
Really great. I know everybody says that, but really. it's been fun. I tend to direct in a way that I approach each show differently, and I kind of do have a moment where I'm like, I actually don't know how to do this. And so I just sort of invent what I'm going to do with each show, and it never is the same. And so with this one, it's been very much that, just the exploration that we've taken as far as physicalization. With it's going to be a much more physical Hedda than is typically.
As far as action or and or posture, or as far as
all of the above.
Yeah,
yes,
all the above.
I mean, I want to use the stage. I want it to have, you know, a real forward motion. I want it to have intensity and urgency. And I'm not afraid of jumping, lying down, you know, dancing. If that, you know, I mean, we're figuring it out. But yeah, it's going to use the space.
Very good. Now you inspired me to look up on this, and this is for everybody. This is from a website called The Toast, and it's not giving away anything about the plot. But it just reminded me of this: things women in literature have died from. Cold hands, beautiful face, missing slippers, night brain, going outside at night in Italy, shawl insufficiency, too many pillows, garden troubles, someone says no very loudly while they were in the room, letter reading itis, drawing room anguish, not enough pillows, too many novels, haven't seen the sea in a long time, pony exhaustion, sherry served too cold, ship infidelity, spent more than a month in London after growing up in Yorkshire, clergyman's dropsy, flirting headaches, river of unhappiness, general bummers, beautiful chestnut hair, spinal degeneration as a result of pride, parents too happy, and finally, the unpleasantness.
Yeah, we cover all that.
I think we're all suffering from the unpleasantness.
No gunshot in there at all?
Oh, that's easy. These are the real deaths. So.
I do expect a full bibliography.
Well, I think, yeah, they don't say where it's from. I think they want you to go look it up and figure it out. Or you're like, oh, yeah, I read that one. So anyway, yes, there is that. All right, moving on over to Titus.
Yes.
So so Titus and Medea, there's a double feature right there. But Full disclosure, I got to be in a production at Richmond Shakespeare playing Saturninus many, many years ago.
Oh, nice.
How are things in Rome?
Difficult. This is not Rome's best days. I think it's going to be a fun show.
As much fun as Titus Andronicus can be.
Well, there's a lot of comedy in it, actually, or
yes,
at least the way we're doing it. I don't know if Shakespeare intended that, but there are a lot of places where he pretends to be mad. The Goths are really stupid.
Hold on. Apparently, this is why we do the curtain speech recorded, I guess. So are we okay over there? Okay, cool. Uh-huh.
Oh,
No, it's fine.
I thought it was the dance break.
Oh, the dance. I will tell you this story off the air. Anyway, continue, please.
The Goths are really stupid and do some things that I just look at and go, who in the right mind would even... Oh, well, never mind. So it's got a lot of fun stuff in it. There will pretty much be a splash zone. So, you know, if you're into, you know, theme parks, there's that.
Or a Gallagher concert.
That's right. So, you know, there's lots of fun stuff in it. Some of the stuff of murders probably isn't for everybody's taste. My sister called me the other day and said, I don't think I can do this. Is this as violent as it sounds? And I went, yeah, it is. Yeah.
So when it comes to the stage play, are you using squibs? How are you handling it? Because there is a fairly high body count in this,
yes,
in the show.
Yeah. We are. I don't know yet. We are using lots of blood packs. I know that much. We just haven't got that far yet.
Okay.
So where you're going to hide the body pack or the blood pack and all of that. We're going to start that next week. And they said, bring a change of clothes because you're going to need it. So, yeah, lots of blood.
Very good. Very good. Nice there. So,
good for vampires.
Well, and it's actually perfect for this. Yeah, perfect for this time of year. Doing Titus in October really, really works. So that's another one where I got to see three productions in about a year. Richmond Shakespeare did it, and then it was done here with Jamie McNulty as Titus, and my buddy Kelly Gualdoni was Tamara, and then the group in Evansville did it that time. Again, these just kind of come in spurts, so to speak. But it can be a lot of fun. But yeah, you're right. There's some. Obviously, you have comedic moments in tragedies because you need to lighten up slightly.
Yeah.
Just like there's some serious moments, you know, like yelling at a princess. In something like As You Like It. So so I know one of the other shows is being done is Medea, as I mentioned. That was actually the second play I have ever directed. So, and yes, it's Euripides. It's not Tyler Perry. It's a mother only a mother could love. And one of the biggest examples of, I mean, one of the biggest revenge stories ever of what happens when you're banished and your husband decides to be Rod Stewart and upgrade in the marriage department, you murder your kids. So there's your date play right
spoiler.
There. I'm sorry, Greek play? Come on now.
Yeah, they've had time.
And Rosebud was a sled, okay?
Oh!
There's that. So
I'm leaving.
No, you're not.
I was going to watch it next week.
What do you want me to do? I can't do that. So, all right. By the way, we will tell you about the Civil War. Spoiler alert there. Even though there are flags waved. Anyway, so, but no, it sounds like everything's going swimmingly with everyone's productions. Is that true?
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. I mean, there are challenges inside of every single rehearsal room, right? If you don't come up against any wall throughout your process, then you're probably not pushing the work hard enough to discover new things and make new choices on stage. But what's lovely about our art form is the ability to build together and come up with those solutions as a team, right? We're not isolated in the work that we're making, so we get to develop this sense of community and building worlds together.
Right. And I think also being on both ends, When you have a cast that knows what they're doing, it feels like there are times as a director where you're like, I don't feel like I'm directing. It's because they know how to do the lifting. You don't have to show them. They can do it with their legs, not with their back kind of story.
Right, and what a gift.
It's not a bad gift to have. All right, let's go around the horn, plug your shows and the dates and the locations. And apparently there's a website we're supposed to mention. That's what – so go ahead.
There sure is. Yeah, all this information can be found at www.indybardfest.com.
Indy with a Y.
I-N-D-Y, bardfest.com. Yeah, so I'm directing A Bold Stroke for a Husband. It is a sexy, steamy, hilarious disguise comedy about justice and agency for women. And we're playing at the Shelton Auditorium October 20th through 29th, Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m.
Very good.
IndieBardFest.com. Yes. Yes. As You Like It, we're playing at Mud Creek Theater out there at 86th and Mud Creek Road. We open tomorrow night, October 6th, and run through October.
This is going to run Friday, so it's going to open this weekend.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Okay.
Keep
so
going.
We open the 6th and run through the 15th.
Yep.
So.
Okay.
All right. So Hedda Gabler, she's pretty cool. She's complicated. She's got a lot to say. And you'll have a lot to say after this year. It's about what happens when a person doesn't have any say over what they do, how they self-destruct, and how they otherwise destruct. And it's also fun. And so that's at Arts for Lawrence, and tickets at IndieBardFest.com. And that's November 3rd through 12th.
Very good.
And Titus Andronicus is a play about revenge and, you know, a little bit of murder and cannibalism, like you do. And you could find tickets at IndieBardFest.com. I know you didn't know that.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, you sure can. And I'll jump back on for Medea, too, right? So we have Medea, which is, you know, one of the most produced Greek plays in terms of stories that have had longevity in theatrical history. Medea is one of them. It's a story about compelling, multi-dimensional women, right, who fight for their agency to get revenge in a world where they have power, and specifically power that is not given to them by men, right? So it is this challenging, really difficult story of revenge, empowerment, and justice that's playing at Indie Fringe, the October 20th through 29th, sort of in rep with Titus Andronicus. Tickets are available. I know. It's the Halloween double feature,
so,
y'all.
I
right?
know. My
Halloween
God.
Weekend, Medea one night, Titus Andronicus the next one. Wow, that sounds like a great time
to
me.
I've done press screenings of two films, and I kind of know. Like, there was a whole Oppenbarbie thing of, like, which one do you watch first? Which one do you watch? You can't. There's just no choice. You just can go either way on this one.
Yeah, there's no but, wrong way to prepare for that.
But I will tell you, before you go to bed, cleanse your palate, watch Bob's Burgers or Archer or something. You don't want to watch both of these and go, let's just go to bed.
You are so right. So that's at Indie Fringe, the 20th through the 29th. Tickets at IndieBardFest.com and also IndieFringe.org.
And, of course, Troilus and Cressida is happening at the Cat up in Carmel. That is running the 6th through the 15th. And you can go to IndieBardFest.com for all the information there. So you have you have about the next month planned if you want to see some theater, gang. Mm-hmm. So check that out. And there's content advisory. Look it up. I'm Maurice Sendak. I would just say let them wet their pants. So, you know, if you don't do the research, I can't help you. All right, before we wrap things up, because this is a film show and y'all have had nothing to do right lately, have you been able to watch any films to unwind when you're not in rehearsal?
So recently, my partner and I did a double feature of Becky and The Wrath of Becky, which were such a trip. So if you don't know anything about them, I think my log line for it is young Gen Z girl takes on white supremacy in a gory revenge flick. And it's fascinating.
It's the one with first one was with Kevin James.
It sure is.
In a rare villainous role.
Oh my gosh. And his acting was incredible in it, but I was so taken aback. I said, Kevin James, what are you doing here?
Not doing a film with his vacation with Sandler, that's why.
You're so right. You're so right.
Anybody else?
I just watched it's a really current movie. It's called Mannequin with or not Mannequin. Not Mannequin.
Nothing's gonna stop us now.
Oh my God! What is it called? It's with Joan Crawford. And she swept out to sea. That's a spoiler alert. Because you made me think of it because we were talking about that.
No.
It was written by Clifford Odets.
Okay, hold on.
And it was also with John Garfield, and he's a violin player. And she's, can I say the B word?
Oh, humoresque.
Humoresque.
From 1946.
It has a Q in it. Oh, my God.
Yeah. if you have to ask,
what are you
you
don't think so? You don't think it's good?
No. I just thought the B word.
Oh, okay, yeah, fine.
If
anyway, Joan Crawford is in it. And an unpleasant woman at times, but she
don't F with her, fellas.
Exactly, but so much better, and you also love her to death, and it has some of the snappiest dialogue. I highly recommend
Odets
it.
Odets will do that. So.
Yep, it's very really good.
Cool. Anybody else?
Women Talking.
Yes, yeah. That made my top five.
Wow, it was one of those. We watched it. My daughter said, "You will watch this movie." She was very direct about it.
How old's your daughter?
She is. That is not a nice question to ask.
Oh, okay. All right. So I got, I don't, hey, mine's.
Older than 12.
Mine's a senior in college. So anyway, but yeah.
Isn't.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But no, so but for those who don't know, it's set in a religious sect, I guess.
Yeah,
and
it was a Mennonite community.
Right. And there's a great.
And it's a true story.
Yes. A great debate on whether to stay or leave because some of the female members have been assaulted by some of the locals. And it's a great debate and a great cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the older women in it are terrific.
Yep. Frances McDormand, Judith Ivey. So, really, really strong stuff. Yeah. Okay. Last thing going around. I'm sorry, Kevin. Yeah.
I'd like to say the one that I watched just a couple of weeks ago that I was really impressed with it. Finally got around to seeing The Tragedy of Macbeth with Denzel Washington.
It's not a theater. It's a radio station. You can say it. Macbeth.
Frances McDormand and Brendan Gleeson is in it.
Brendan
that
Gleeson's
as well,
so in it, yep.
All-star cast.
Done by one Cohen.
Yeah, Joel Cohen. Excellent film. Very well done. I definitely consider it an art film, for sure.
Well, sure.
Yeah, it's beautifully done. It's shot in black and white. Brilliant.
One of the things I love about, besides the fact that Stephen Root gets one, he brings some levity as the porter, but the woman who plays the witches, because she plays all three, she's a contortionist. And the first thing I had noticed her in, she was in Julie Taymor's Midsummer Night's Dream that was done for National Theater Live, which looked like it was in a train station on a rail, kind of a fashion railway thing. So. Yeah. Well, cool. All right. So that actually sets me up. Before we'll wrap things up, your favorite Shakespeare film? Thinking gears are moving. This is good. And so is Macbeth yours, Kevin, or do you want to do
Well, I was impressed with it, but okay. I really like Kenneth Branagh's version of Much Ado About Nothing with Emma Thompson.
Yep.
Yeah, brilliant. Fun film.
And that's a gig you don't turn down.
Denzel Washington was in that one as well, too.
Yes, and it's one of those, I love Denzel, and I understand why he's, now that he's, go see Equalizer 3, because if it gets him to do all the August Wilson plays, fine. But I know Macbeth was not for money. That was just the fact he got to do that. So, anyway, anybody else?
10 Things I Hate About You.
Very good.
So good.
It's good 101. And it's great when you tell young people, that's Shakespeare. No, it isn't. Yeah, it is. I'm afraid so.
Yeah, I'm really torn between, just for entertainment purposes, Kenneth Branagh's Twelfth Night, Helena Bonham Carter as Olivia, fabulous. And then also Julie Taymor's Titus Andronicus.
It's
very dear to my heart as an art film. Incredible. No wonder she got a MacArthur Genius Grant.
I'm going to be that guy. It was Trevor Nunn that
directed. Oh, Trevor Nunn. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Yeah. Kenneth Branagh is in it, though, right? Am I not?
Nope.
Oh, my goodness. Who am I?
You're
24601.
No, it happens. It's all right. Don't worry about it. So,
mine would be Much Ado, I think. I was sitting here going, have I seen that many? Do I know any of them? I did like the comparison of Henry V with Laurence Olivier, I think it's Henry V, and Kenneth Branagh. just the comparison of the time and what they did. I thought that was fascinating.
And I know that's Glenn's favorite because he's mentioned that on the show last week. But it's also great. Again, it's a great compare contrast. Yeah. Now, have you seen because Much Ado, I had just graduated college. And I remember seeing it at the old Art House Theater in Castleton. And a bunch of Ball State Theater wackos just kind of went and just kind of flooded. And it was something I wound up – I think I've seen that Shakespeare film more than anything over the years, probably like a dozen times. And then when I was 44, I got to play Benedict. Very first year of the Shakespeare of the Richmond Shakespeare Festival. You know, game changer for me. And what was funny is like a week after we closed, it was a lazy Sunday. I made a pot of coffee, and I revisited the film, and my experience with it had changed because I had my own experience with it. Didn't make it better, didn't make it worse, but it was just that thing of now that I've had my own experience with it, my point of view of it is different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the great things about art. And another reason, you know, kind of goes back to, yes, go see three versions of the same play if you can within a short amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has anybody seen the Joss Whedon version of Much Ado About Nothing?
Oh, yes.
No. Yeah. It's kind of, if Branagh's was like a summer in Italy, Whedon's is like a weekend in L.A. Mm-hmm. It's black and white, modern dress, it's kind of like a weekend-long cocktail party with his regular band of players. I would see Sir Ken's first if you had to do a compare-contrast, but it's another great example of same story done two completely different ways.
Yeah.
IndieBardFest.com? Yes,
indeed.
That's where. That's where we are. So anyway, friends, you have plenty to choose from. Go see some live theater, and you know, we hope to see you in the aisles, guys. Thanks for coming and hanging out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
There you go. Round two of a roundtable discussion of Indie Bard Fest. You can go to IndieBardFest.com for all the shows and times and locations and tickets. And yes, I'm playing Corin in Indie Bard's Fest production of As You Like It, which is happening at Mud Creek Players. The next two, Friday, Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 2:30. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Just a reminder, heartlandfilm.org. You can see some original independent films as well as some independent plays and schedule your weekend accordingly. We'll go around the horn a little bit and then we'll grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching lately. I do want to mention my guys over at Golan Globus. They are dedicating the month of Schlocktober to Vincent Price. So they started this week with The Abominable Dr. Fibes, and they will be doing Dr. Fibes Rises again next week. I'm hoping to be a guest on the show. We'll just have to see if it works out in the schedule. And this week on You Must Remember This by host Karina Longworth, continuing with Erotic 90s, a look at Adrienne Lyne's film version of Lolita. So that is happening there. Okay. And I do want to raise a glass to Dick Butkus. I know I'm a Lions fan, and he is number 51 with the Bears, probably the greatest middle linebacker of all. But after his retirement, did a lot of TV and did a few films. I know he played himself uncredited in Brian's Song, but appeared in films like Cry Onion. I remember him as Rodeo in Mother Jugs and Speed. Then there was the Disney film Gus. Played himself quite a bit in many shows. Cracking Up. I forgot he was in that Jerry Lewis film. Johnny Dangerously, of course. Hamburger, the motion picture. And the last thing I know of, last film of note that he did was playing one of the opposing coaches in Oliver Stone's Any Given Sunday. So salute to Dick Butkus from one NFC North fan to another. And this rarely happens. Okay, let's go around the horn. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In on screen one is Dumb Money, followed by Bottoms, and then Dumb Money again. Screen two, Saw 10, When Evil Lurks, and Saw 10. Screen 3, The Exorcist Believer, The Nun 2, and then a rescreen of The Exorcist. And then Screen 4, A Haunting in Venice and The Creator. All of that is happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In this weekend is Drive-In Massacre 2023. That is the film lineup for Friday night, Let's Scare Jessica to Death, Poltergeist, Friday the 13th for the final chapter, Giant Spider Invasion, and an ooh, Dracula versus Frankenstein. Saturday, October 7th, Christine, Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2, Fake 50s Trailer Competition, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and Messiah of Evil. That is happening this weekend at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. Over at IU Cinema tonight at 7 o'clock, Past Lives, probably the best film I've seen so far this year. Friday at 10 p.m. as a part of their Friday Night Frights is Talk to Me. Saturday at 4 p.m. from 1932, Shanghai Express. Saturday night at 7, Past Lives. Sunday, October 8th at 1 p.m. is Manifesto. And Tuesday at 7 p.m. is Bad Press. And then a filmmaker scheduled to appear Thursday, October 12th for the 7 p.m. screening of Users. Friday, October 13th at 7 p.m. Yep, Friday the 13th, Part 2 from 1981. All of that is happening over at IU Cinema at the Historic Artcraft Theater in Franklin. Tomorrow, October 7th, Saturday, 7:30 p.m., the 1922 silent film with live organ accompaniment of Nosferatu. Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., October 13th and 14th, Hocus Pocus. And then they'll show it on Sunday, October 15th at 2 and 5 p.m. Friday, October 20th, 7:30 p.m., This Island Earth, not the Mystery Science Theater treatment of it, but the actual film itself. Saturday, October 21st at 2 p.m., House of Frankenstein. Saturday at 5 p.m., October 21st, Son of Frankenstein. And then Saturday, 7:30 p.m., Saturday, October 21st, 7:30 p.m., The Black Cat with Sammy Terry on stage for that, as well as the October 21st, Saturday, 9:30 p.m. screening of Island of Lost Souls. And then Friday and Saturday, October 27th and 28th, the 1986 musical version of Little Shop of Horrors. All of that is happening at the Historic Artcraft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. And we start on Facebook with Ryan. By the way, full disclosure, Ryan's in It's a Wonderful Life, in As You Like It with me. Ryan writes, the Roald Dahl Wes Anderson shorts on Netflix, unique, fun, and clever, just like Ryan. My favorite was The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Thank you, Ryan. Jamie writes, Halloween Town and Halloween Town 2, as well as Halloween Town High. Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet Frankenstein. Disney sing-along songs, Halloween Hauntings. Frankenweenie, Elvira Mistress of the Dark, Elvira's Haunted Hills, Return to Halloween Town, and the most recent Haunted Mansion. Can you sense a theme? She writes. Thank you, Doctor. David writes, Places in the Heart. I liked it. I really, really liked it. I know what you did there. Stephanie writes, no movies lately. Very satisfying finale to Ahsoka. Garland writes, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Extended Edition, which means there's more endings, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. Doug writes, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, and four films from my Chicago and film class. The 1932 Scarface, Mean Girls, Source Code, and Hogtown, plus season 3 of Only Murders in the Building. Amanda writes, Right to Read, as well as Into the Woods, A Haunting in Venice, At Close Range and Colors, it's a double feature, Jane Mansfield's Car, and Only the Brave. Jessica writes, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Army of Darkness, Black Box, and Nightmare on Elm Street. Eric writes, a week of happy rewatches. Tracy, Harlow, and Powell in Myrna Loy in Libeled Lady from 1936. Hoosiers, and a True Grit double feature, Wayne versus Bridges, 1969 versus 2010. I still like both versions equally, which is to say a lot. I like the Coens a little more. It's off kilter, odd sense of humor. I think Haley Seinfeld does a better job in the role than, say, Kim Darby. The original True Grit is fine. It's just more of the John Wayne show than really needed to be. But, you got an Oscar for it. So anyway, but yes, they can, but they can exist in the same universe. There's nothing wrong with that. Dan Epstein, who I need to get back on the show someday, the original Sugar Hill. Don't look for the one with Wesley Snipes. Always look for the one with voodoo in it. Right, Abdul? Lou Harry writes, Past Lives, Spider-Man Homecoming, Evil of Frankenstein, and Horror of Frankenstein. Brian writes, First time viewing Carnival of Souls from 1962, but I've been burning through rewatches of all Jordan Peele's films and the Scream movies this week while I work. Thank you, Brian. Taylor writes, Whiplash from 1948. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Dogma, Buckaroo Banzai, and Spy. Dakota writes, Nude per Assassino. I butchered that. House of a Thousand Corpses, Ouija, Origin of Evil, The Autopsy of Jane Doe, Resident Evil, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Mandy. Kate writes, Rebel Without a Cause. I have become a James Dean fan. Oh, the movies he could have made. Yeah, Kate, but we... I know. And we got three, so we should cherish those. And you reminded me of the Paramount Theater in Anderson. I got to see Rebel Without a Cause and Giant on the big screen with a bunch of friends from school. Taylor writes Exorcist, Exorcist II, The Heretic, Exorcist III. There's a fun write-up of Exorcist III in the AV Club. Hey, it's an article. It's not a list. And then The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. Thank you, Taylor. Melissa writes Seven. David writes The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, Poison, and The Rat Catcher. Daniel writes Bad Education, Oliver, Sherlock the Abominable Bride, The Man Who Came to Dinner, The Private Eyes, Notorious, Pride of the Yankees, The Original Manchurian Candidate, The 50s, The Man Who Knew Too Much, and Move Over, Darling. Nick Rogers writes Frenzy, I'm Dangerous Tonight, Books of Blood, Solemn, The Last Man on Earth, Saw 10, or Saw X, Dumb Money, The Creator, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, The Swan, The Rat Catcher, and the 2023 Poison. JJ writes Anchorman, still stupid, still funny, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, The Blood on Satan's Claw, Hammer-style Pilgrims versus Cult Flick, yep, and The Creator, beautiful, lived-in world, predictable story. Adrian writes, It was Groucho Marx's birthday, and one of the movie networks had a marathon, so we recorded it and watched it, watched At the Circus, A Day at the Races, and A Night at the Opera. Okay. Adrian writes, Let's face it, I was born to play Margaret Dumont, and I actually did use Lydia the Tattoo Lady as an audition song for years. Thank you, Adrian, and tell Margaret about my shows. Abby writes, The Greatest Showman, Tracy Forner. I love Tracy. Portions, if you know Tracy, you know this recurring bit. Portions of Moneyball, The Drop, Blazing Saddles, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, all of Home for the Holidays, and Chef. I'm glad to know you can complete films as well, Tracy. Hang in there, pal. Beverly writes Spencer and Moonage Daydream. Chloe writes Midsummer Night's Dream. From 2017, Showgirls for the First Time, Diabolique, and Babylon. Michael writes The Great Dictator, Goodfellas, Devil's Cargo, Chaos Walking, Murder My Sweet, and The Falcon Takes Over. And finally, Gary writes War Italian Style, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, You Only Live Twice, The Creator, To the Stars, Remember the Days, and The Street Fighter. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's a few out there. Of course, you got the Heartland International Film Festival going on through October 15th. Go to heartlandfilm.org for all the information. And then go to indiebardfest.com so you can see some live theater and you can see some independent, hard-to-find films that you won't be able to see anywhere else for the most part. So anyway, heartlandfilm.org. and IndieBardFest.com. Hope to see you at Mud Creek Players for the production of As You Like It, which I am playing Corin. And thanks for being out there, friends. I appreciate it. I ran into a couple of folks who posted who post on social media their film titles at Indie Jazz Fest last week. And I appreciate you being a part of the show and listening and sharing. So we're all in this together. Anyway, we'll do this again next week. Take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!